I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lopate today. And here is something you probably didn't already know. Hippo sweat has powerful antibiotic and sunblock properties, and scientists want to learn more about it in the hopes that it could be useful to humans. With me now is herpetologist Dr. Brady Barr, who went to great lengths to collect a sample of hippo sweat, including wearing a hippo decoy suit. Dr. Barr stars in the National Geographic Channel's Dangerous Encounters with Brady Barr, Undercover Hippo, which airs on Sunday, January 20th at 9 p.m. Welcome.
Hey, thanks.
All right, the first question is, how do you get close enough to a hippo?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, these are the second largest land animals on the planet. They weigh 6,000 pounds.
6,000 pounds.
6,000 pounds. They can run like the wind. They've got...
Wait, they weigh 6,000 pounds and can run like the wind? How do
they
do that?
Yeah, well, faster than I can. They can run about 15 miles an hour, which is fast. And they have a mouthful of very large teeth. Very, very dangerous animal. Thus, the problem of getting up close and personal. And they spend most of their time in the water. You can't dart them, tranquilize them, or they'll drown. If you try to capture them, they get really stressed out, and the stress can actually kill them. So it's difficult to work with these animals, and subsequently not a lot is known in terms of hands-on research with hippos. Thus the idea of building a hippo suit, a decoy.
So what did that look like?
It looked like a hippo. I mean, it had to look believable. It was molded after an actual hippo. So it was the exact same size as a hippo. Very, very believable. But the trick was it had to be strong enough to protect me. So it had to be authentic looking, but also strong enough to protect me in case one of these hippos would attack.
So I'm sort of conjuring my memories of like grade school plays where somebody played the front of the horse and somebody plays the back of the horse. I mean, was this something you got to do all by yourself?
Yeah, you know, and if I had it to do over again, I'd probably try to find a back end to the hippo. Because this thing weighed over 200 pounds. It was made out of Kevlar and a metal frame with a lifelike latex skin on top of it. But very heavy, and it did allow me some mobility, but, you know, I wasn't going to travel long distances wearing this hippo disguise.
We have some sounds of hippos. I'd love for our listeners to hear what hippos sound like so they can imagine you in your hippo suit with them. Let's listen to that. What interesting, strange sounds.
Yeah, very, very. And, you know, imagine being in a very cramped, the tight confines of inside this hippo decoy late at night. You're all alone. You're scared. And you hear that sound multiplied by 100. You know, very eerie noise. That's called wheeze honking. That's a territorial vocalization. And they're saying, hey, this is my territory. Who the heck are you, strange hippo?
And so did you have to learn how to say something back?
You know, I did. I would wheeze honk back just to see if I could get some kind of response. And I'm not sure what I was saying, but it got a response.
And what was that response?
Well, sometimes they'd come up investigate me. Sometimes they would ignore me. Sometimes they, seemed a little angry.
So, okay, you're there in your hippo suit. You said it's nighttime, so you have to do this at the nighttime. You're getting these territorial noises. How do you then actually get some hippo sweat from these things?
Well, this took place during the daytime and at night, but, you know, usually the hippos will stay in the water most of the day and then come out at night to feed in the savanna. The idea was that I needed to get close enough to get a sample of sweat. That either meant that the hippos had to come close to me or I had to go close to them. So, you know, I used both approaches. I would try to set up shop on a hippo trail leading from the water to the feeding grounds. And, you know, they would just line up and go right by me. Other times I would try to approach them.
And physically, how did you get the sweat? Did they rub up against your suit and you had collectors on your suit?
No, I had trap doors on either side of the hippo decoy with a long pole, long scraper, like a tooth scraper or a giant Q-tip, if you will. And I would extend it and, you know, try to swab their bodies and get some of this greasy sweat off of their hides.
So let's talk about that greasy sweat. How did scientists ever even think, oh, let's check out what's in hippo sweat?
You know, that's a good question, and I'm not a chemist or a molecular biologist, so I'm just the sweat boy. I'm not sure, but how this whole expedition came about was, I'm a crocodilian biologist. I'm an expert on crocodiles, and crocodiles are also difficult to approach and get up close and personal with.
But they don't sweat, do they?
No, they don't.
Yeah.
But they do get very stressed out when you capture them, and crocodiles die very easily when you capture them. So I was always looking for alternatives. A few years ago, I had a lifelike crocodile decoy made, which I got inside and was very successful. I actually crawled right up to hippos and literally could hold their hand, and I was able to place scientific devices onto their bodies without having to tie them up and then, you know, whip them into submission. So, you know, other scientists saw how successful this technique was, and they looked at a new application for other difficult, dangerous animals to work with, hippos. And that's where the idea came from.
I see. So you were recognized as the guy who could recreate these animals.
Yeah.
And so was it difficult to go from crocodiles to hippos?
You know, it was, because the hippo is a much larger animal. And it had to afford me a lot more
protection.
So, you know, we put the suit through a lot of tests. I mean, I had to be confident that I was going to be protected. I did not want this hippo decoy to be my coffin.
What you said, you're not a molecular biologist, but do you have a sense of what the properties in the sweat are that they were really looking for?
Well, here's the difficult thing about it. Hippo sweat has been studied from captive animals, and it's been determined that it has natural sunblock properties as well as an antibiotic, antiseptic qualities. The problem is, these are captive animals, and you kind of are what you eat. So it's thought that wild hippos' body chemistry would be dramatically different than captive animals.
And I know for humans, emotional states can affect the property
sure.
of sweat, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. But to further complicate the situation, these compounds are very unstable, and when they're off the hippo's body, they break down. So you don't have much time to study this substance. So you literally have to set up a field laboratory and immediately go to work. So I took a scientist with me, a molecular scientist with me that did just that, set up a laboratory in the wilds of Zambia. So I would hand off the sweat sample, and then he would do his thing.
But I'm sort of picturing you in your hippo suit with those long toothpicks, gathering things up, and then trying to lumber as fast as you can back to your
right.
scientist.
You know, it reminded me of, like, you know, organ donors, you know, and you know, they get a kidney in a cooler, and you got to get it in a fast car and on a train or a helicopter, and you get it to the person that needs it. I mean, you can't spare a second. And that's kind of the same situation here is, you know, once you get the sweat, you know, it's a mad dash to the scientist.
What did he find?
Well, I don't want to give away the last chapter of the film. I mean, it's pretty interesting, but I think that, you know, if you tune in to the National Geographic Channel this Sunday night, that you will be excited to see how this all ends up.
Well, you're a good tease for the television show. When you were doing this, did you find that the hippos were skeptical of you? I mean, did you have to smell the same way as they did? You know, you read a lot about animals really sensing each other by smell as much as by sight.
Great question. I was waiting for that question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, to make it look more believable, we smeared it with hippo dung. We lathered up hippo dung all over it. And, I mean, hippos are covered in dung naturally. So it gave it a more authentic look and definitely a more authentic smell.
And did you have to go into the water, too, or was that something that was not...
The water really scared me. I mean, that's really what terrified me, is if a hippo grabbed me and pulled me into the water. I mean, the suit weighs 200 pounds, and I would have gone right to the bottom. I had a scuba tank. I had oxygen, an oxygen tank inside with me just in case. But I tried to keep my distance from the water's edge.
What does your wife think about you going off and dressing up like a hippo and doing these things?
She's very, very concerned, especially with something that's outside of my field of expertise, like hippos. You know, I've worked on crocs for 20 years.
She's gotten used to crocodiles.
Yeah, yeah. Crocodiles and snakes she can handle. We start talking about, you know, elephants and hippos and rhinos. She gets pretty concerned, and she keeps a closer eye on me, that's for sure.
Do you have any kids?
I do. I have one daughter, 3 years old.
Oh, okay. So she's not old enough yet to bring you into school and say, this is my dad. He dresses like a hippo.
No, she still does that. I mean, we'll be at the grocery store, you know, or at the mall, and she'll just say that to strangers. This is my daddy. He goes to Africa.
Did you imagine that this would be what you were doing when you were doing your grad studies and focusing on crocodiles and snakes and herpetology?
Absolutely not. You know, before I went back to graduate school, I was a high school teacher, and education is real important to me, and I love kids and I love teaching. And I went back and I got a PhD in biology and worked on alligators in the Everglades, and to think that I would end up on television hosting a series and educating through television was beyond my wildest dreams. But talk about exciting. You know, I feel like my classroom, I didn't stop teaching. My classroom just went from 30 to 300 million globally. So television is a very, very powerful tool, and with that comes a strong responsibility to make sure you're teaching the right thing.
And your teaching tools change a bit, too, from the classroom to
right,
the African.
Right, from a piece of chalk to a hippo suit.
What is your next adventure? Are you planning that now and thinking
next? We have a calendar which is worked out well in advance. I think in a few weeks I'm off back to Africa to work on some crocodiles in Kruger National Park. Sadly, a dam has been put up in the country of Mozambique, which is affecting a river that runs through Kruger. The river is going to become a lake, and the river is home to the highest density of crocodiles in that country. And no one's really sure what the fate of these crocodiles is going to be, so we're going to try to get in there before the water level comes up and try to learn as much about them as we can.
Has it been hard to study an animal that people are so afraid of? I mean, crocodiles are one of those mythic creatures that people scare each other with.
Absolutely, and you know, I tell people all the time, especially with snakes and with crocodiles, that you know, people don't line up to protect the cold, scaly animals of the planet like they do the warm fuzzies, like koala bears or, you know, pandas. It's a tough sell, but they're equally important, and sadly, many of them are critically endangered. A third of all croc species are threatened or endangered. So, you know, you really have to get up on the soapbox and really try to raise people's awareness to the importance of these animals to the health of the planet.
Well, you can answer as your last question, a question that my 9-year-old asked me recently. He said, Mom, why would the losing a predator matter? You know, they just eat other creatures. Why would that matter, you know, if they went extinct?
Well, that's a great question. And, it, you know, not just a predator, but anything, you know, any plant species, any animal species, everything is interconnected. It's the web of life that we're all familiar with. But more so with predators and apex predators, because they regulate populations of other animals. And you take crocodiles, for example, they're apex predators. When they're small, when they're born, they're very small. I mean, literally can fit in the palm of your hand. They provide a food source for countless other animals. Lots of other animals eat baby crocs. So not only are they providing a food source, but then when they get larger, they regulate populations of other animals. So there are many, many reasons why animals are important. The bottom line is we should protect and take care of all living life forms.
Well, thank you. That helps me. We talked about deer and wolves in our suburban neighborhood and right. Why the fact that there are no wolves is the reason we have lots and lots of deer.
Right, it
works in all of these different places. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in to talk about hippos and crocodiles and a lot of things we don't have in New York, but I think we're very interested in around here.
Hey, it's been my pleasure.
Dr. Brady Barr is starring in the National Geographic Channel's Dangerous Encounters with Brady Barr, Undercover Hippo, which airs on Sunday, January 20th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you so much, and we're going to go out with some more of those hippo sounds, and you can join them if you want.